Welcome to Deep Read, where we dive into books that change how we think and work. Just a heads up, this entire episode is AI generated, including our voices, and it's brought to you by Flow State Coffee, the fictional productivity blend that doesn't actually exist. Some details might be off, so please fact check anything important before you act on it. Today, we're talking about Joshua Foer's fascinating book, Moonwalking with Einstein: The Art and Science of Remembering Everything. I'm Marcus, and I'm joined by Sarah Chen, a cognitive psychology researcher who's been studying memory techniques for over a decade.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. This book really bridges the gap between ancient memory traditions and modern neuroscience in a way that's incredibly accessible.
Let's start with why this book exists. Foer was a journalist who stumbled into the world of competitive memorization. What problem was he trying to solve?
Foer noticed something troubling about our relationship with memory in the digital age. We've outsourced so much of our remembering to devices that we've forgotten how powerful our own minds can be.
He went from covering the US Memory Championship as a reporter to actually winning it a year later. That's quite a journey.
Exactly. And that transformation is the book's greatest strength. He's not just reporting on memory athletes, he became one. So he can speak from direct experience about what it takes.
What gave him credibility to write about memory science? He's not a researcher.
That's actually his advantage. He's a skilled journalist who can translate complex research for regular readers. He interviewed leading memory researchers and combined that with his own training experience.
The book subtitle promises Remembering Everything. That sounds like overreach.
It is a bit hyperbolic, but Foer is honest about the limitations. He's really showing us that memory is trainable and that most of us are operating far below our potential.
So what's his central thesis? What's the main argument he's making about memory?
His core claim is that memory isn't fixed. It's a skill that can be dramatically improved through specific techniques. And more importantly, that improving your memory changes how you think.
How does better memory change thinking? That seems like a big claim.
Foer argues that when you can hold more information in your mind simultaneously, you can make connections and see patterns that weren't visible before. It's not just about storage, it's about processing power.
This goes against the common belief that memory doesn't matter in the Google age, right?
Right. Foer pushes back hard against the idea that external memory makes internal memory obsolete. He argues that creativity and deep thinking require having knowledge readily available in your mind, not just accessible through search.
What's the historical context here? Where do these memory techniques come from?
Foer traces these methods back to ancient Greece and Rome. Before writing was common, educated people used elaborate memory systems to store vast amounts of information. The techniques were sophisticated and widely taught.
So what happened? Why did we lose these skills?
The printing press, basically. Once books became cheap and literacy spread, memorization went from essential to optional. Schools stopped teaching memory techniques, treating them as old-fashioned rote learning.
But Foer's arguing we threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Exactly. He distinguishes between mindless repetition and the creative imaginative memory techniques used by ancient orators and modern memory champions. These aren't about rote drilling. They're about building vivid mental structures.
Let's dig into the actual techniques. What's the most fundamental method he teaches?
The memory palace, or method of loci, this is the foundation of almost everything else. You take a familiar physical space and use specific locations within it to store information.
Can you walk us through a concrete example of how this works?
Sure. Let's say you want to remember a grocery list, milk, bread, apples, and chicken. You start at your front door, that's your first location. You visualize a giant milk carton blocking your doorway.
And then you move through the space systematically?
Right. Next location might be your coat closet. You imagine it's stuffed full of bread loaves instead of coats. Then your kitchen table covered in red apples. Finally, a live chicken sitting on your couch.
The images are deliberately weird and memorable.
That's crucial. Farrer emphasized that boring images don't stick. Your memory palace needs to be filled with vivid, bizarre, sometimes crude images. The more outrageous, the more memorable.
Why does location work so well for memory?
Foucher explains that our brains evolved to navigate physical space. We're naturally good at remembering where things are located. The memory palace hijacks this spatial intelligence for abstract information.
What about memorizing numbers? That seems harder than grocery lists.
This is where Foer introduces the major system. It's a code that converts numbers into consonant sounds, which you then turn into words and images.
How does that work exactly?
Each digit from 0 to 9 corresponds to specific consonant sounds. For example, 1 is T or D sounds, 2 is N sounds, 3 is M sounds. You memorize this code first.
Then what? You're still dealing with abstract sounds.
You add vowels to create memorable words. Hey, so 23 becomes name, the N for 2 and M for 3. Then you can visualize a name tag or someone calling out a name.
And longer numbers become sequences of images?
Exactly. A phone number like 2389 might become name and fib. So you picture someone with a name tag telling a lie. Then you place that scene in your memory palace.
This seems incredibly elaborate. Is it really faster than just writing things down?
Foer is honest about this. Initially, it's much slower. But he shows how memory champions can eventually encode information faster than most people can write. The upfront investment pays off.
What about memorizing names and faces? That's something everyone struggles with.
Foer dedicates significant time to this because it's so practical. The key is creating a vivid visual association between the person's face and their name.
Can you give us a specific example?
Let's say you meet someone named Baker. You look for a distinctive feature on their face, maybe prominent eyebrows. Then you imagine tiny baked goods scattered across those eyebrows.
What if the name doesn't have an obvious visual connection?
You create one. For a name like Johnson, you might think Johnson and imagine a father and son having a conversation on the person's forehead. The key is making it personal and visual.
How does this connect with the memory palace technique?
You can place the people you meet in different rooms of your palace. So Baker with his eyebrow pastries might be sitting at your kitchen table while Johnson and his son are in your living room.
The book also covers memorizing entire decks of cards, right? That seems extreme.
It does seem extreme, but Foer uses it to illustrate how all these techniques work together. Each card becomes a specific person or character, and you place them throughout your memory palace.
So the Ace of Spades might always be the same character?
Right. Memory champions have a consistent character for each card. Foer might use Albert Einstein for the Ace of Spades. Then when he sees that card, he places Einstein performing some action in the next location of his palace.
The actions matter too?
Very much. The actions help you remember the sequence. If Einstein is juggling, then gets punched by Mike Tyson, then dances with Marilyn Monroe, you've encoded three cards in order through a mini story.
Let's talk implementation. If someone wanted to start using these techniques, where should they begin?
Foer recommends starting simple. Pick one familiar road, your commute, or walking through your home. Practice placing just 5 items along that route until it becomes automatic.
How long does it take to see results?
Foer's experience suggests you can see improvement within days for simple lists. But developing real fluency with numbers or cards takes weeks of daily practice. He trained intensively for months.
What are the most common mistakes people make when trying these techniques?
The biggest one is making images too bland. Your memory palace needs to be filled with vivid, shocking, or humorous scenes. Polite, ordinary images just don't stick.
Any other major pitfalls?
People often rush through their memory palace too quickly. Foer emphasizes you need to spend time really visualizing each location and its contents. Speed comes with practice, not haste.
What about forgetting your memory palace locations? Doesn't that defeat the purpose?
That's why you start with extremely familiar spaces. You want locations you could navigate blindfolded. Your childhood home, your daily commute, your current apartment, places burned into long-term memory.
How do you handle information that doesn't fit neatly into these visual systems?
Foyer acknowledges this limitation. Abstract concepts, complex relationships, or nuanced ideas don't always translate well. The techniques work best for discrete pieces of information.
So if you only do one thing from this book, what should it be?
Build one simple memory palace with 10 locations. Use it for your daily to-do list or grocery shopping. Don't try to memorize card decks. Just get comfortable with the basic technique.
What about the major system for numbers?
If numbers are important in your work, learn the basic number-to-sound conversions. Even just memorizing your credit card number or a few important phone numbers will give you confidence in the system.
For names and faces, what's the minimum effective dose?
Just start paying attention. 4 emphasizes that most people don't even try to remember names. Simply focusing on the person's face while repeating their name internally is a huge improvement.
Let's be honest about this book's limitations. Where does it overpromise?
The biggest issue is the title's promise of remembering everything. These techniques are powerful but narrow. They won't help you remember where you put your keys or what you discussed in yesterday's meeting.
What else does the book struggle with?
Foer doesn't adequately address the time investment required. He was essentially training full-time for months. Most readers can't replicate that commitment, and he doesn't provide enough guidance for casual learners.
How does it compare to other memory books?
It's much more engaging than typical how-to books because of Foer's personal journey. But books like The Memory Book by Harry Lorraine are more systematic about teaching the techniques step by step.
What about the scientific claims? Are they solid?
Generally, yes. But Foer sometimes overstates the research. He presents memory improvement as more transformative for general intelligence than the evidence really supports.
Does he address individual differences in memory ability?
Not really. He focuses on the idea that anyone can improve dramatically, but doesn't acknowledge that people start from different baselines or learn at different rates.
What important topics does the book leave out?
Emotional memory, traumatic memory, and memory disorders get almost no attention. The book's very focused on deliberate memorization of neutral information.
If someone wanted to go deeper, what should they read next?
For more techniques, Harry Lorraine's work. For memory science, try The 7 Sins of Memory by Daniel Schachter. For practical applications, Make It Stick by Brown, Ruediger, and McDaniel.
How has this book influenced memory training and education?
It definitely sparked renewed interest in memory techniques. You see more schools experimenting with memory palaces, and there's been growth in memory competitions and training programs.
Has it changed how we think about memory in the digital age?
To some extent. It's given ammunition to people arguing that we shouldn't completely outsource our memory to devices. But I'd say the dominant trend toward external memory has continued.
What criticism has the book received over time?
Some educators argue it promotes flashy techniques over deep understanding. There's also criticism that it's too focused on memory sports rather than practical applications for most people.
Any updates on the research since 2011?
Brain imaging studies have confirmed that memory athletes do show different patterns of neural activity, but we haven't seen evidence that memory training transfers to general cognitive improvement as much as Foer suggested.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important takeaway from this conversation?
Your memory is far more capable than you probably think. You don't need to become a memory champion, but investing some time in basic techniques can genuinely improve your daily life.
And the simplest way to start?
Tonight, when you make your to-do list for tomorrow, don't write it down. Instead, place each task in a different room of your home. Walk through that mental journey a few times.
Then tomorrow, see if you can retrieve your tasks by taking that same mental walk.
Exactly. You'll probably be surprised at how well it works. And that surprise is what Foer experienced when he first discovered these techniques. The realization that your mind is capable of much more than you assumed.
Sarah, thanks for helping us understand both the power and the limitations of Foer's approach. This has been genuinely useful.
My pleasure, Marcus. I hope listeners will give these techniques a try, even if they just use them for grocery lists.